PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehon.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to your program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with us. For this, the last show of July, yes, we're actually in the middle of summer. When I mean the middle of summer, I mean literally the middle of summer. Beautiful, well, some people might not think it's beautiful, but beautiful 100% humidity with temperatures of between 36 and 39. And, that's the only thing I can say is, yeah. And I think for the past few weeks, I've been spending most of my time outside filming that TV series, which I told you about, the Taiwan version of Top Gear, which is coming out in the fall. Trying to catch up, actually, because of a mishap that we had, well, 2 months ago. But I'm not going to tell you about that because I can't, actually. Not until the show airs. But it was rather spectacular. That's the only thing I will say. And I now fully understand the reason behind airbags and good quality seatbelts. That's all I will tell you. Anyway, very nice to have you with us today. We are going to be continuing with the final part of our docudrama, Tales of Dutch Formosa, that we run at every time of the year. Also, some information, which I'll tell you about after we take a listen to our first song, about a new schedule that we have for listeners in the Caribbean and North America. And that's coming up in a little bit. But first, let's take a listen to Oliver Mutegudzi with Wake Up. Thank you. performed by Oliver Mutuguti. Actually, quite a bit of the music today on the show has an African kind of Caribbean feel, Jamaican feel. And that's actually because, well, the weather is actually so hot right now that I think it's very appropriate to play that kind of music today. And that's actually just how I feel, just that kind of Caribbean feeling today. I was thinking of digging out Deo, Deo, you know, Harry Belafonte, but no, we leave that for another time. Anyway, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, PCJ Radio International had a special program that we put out. We got an overwhelming response from it, and we are going to be doing it again. Now, in case you are wondering what the program was called, it was called PCJ Radio International Presents from the Radio Netherlands Archives. And we are not going to be making those available online just yet. We actually have another program in the series coming up in August, which I will tell you about on next week's program. That program will also be presented by Paul Macquarie, and I'll give out the times and frequencies. Now, speaking about times and frequencies, we're restarting a couple of transmissions that we actually haven't done in a very long time, because we mainly focus on Southeast Asia, East Asia, and the Pacific. But we decided to start again transmissions in English to the Caribbean and the United States, or North America, actually, to be more precise. The times and frequencies are Wednesdays, that's Wednesdays at 100 hours UTC. Wednesdays at 100 hours UTC on 11580 kilohertz. That's Wednesdays at 100 hours UTC on 11580 kilohertz. And Friday, so it's actually twice a week, at 22 hours UTC, and that's specifically targeted to the Caribbean and Latin America. So Friday at 22 hours UTC on 9955 kilohertz. Now, we actually just started doing it, so if you do manage to pick it up, we are going to be sending out a special EQSL for that. The information, of course, is available at our website, pcjmedia.com, on the front page. So do check it out if you can. What the programming will be, well, you have to tune in. There'll be a lot of surprises. We're going to try to surprise the listener during both of them, both of those two twice-weekly transmissions, so you never know what you're going to hear. We're trying to make it interesting. And we will be doing some live programs and opening up the phone lines to them. Okay. Time now for more music. The song we're going to take a listen to is called Mother Lisa, and it's performed by legendary reggae artist Leroy Smart.
Whoa, Mother Lisa. I love your daughter, Mother Lisa. I love your daughter. Please let her come and stay with me, for only she can set my heart trouble free. Lisa, I love your daughter. Mother Lisa, I love your daughter. For many a times do I roam, trying to find the love of my own, but someone deep inside of me makes me feel it's got to be she. Mother Lisa, I love your daughter. Mother Lisa, I love your daughter. Whoa, whoa, yeah. Stay with me, for only she can set my little heart trouble free. Mother Liza, I love your daughter. Mother Liza, I love your daughter. For many a times do I roam, trying to find the love of my own, but someone deep inside of me makes me feel it's got to be she. Mother Liza, I love your daughter. Mother Liza, I love your daughter. Whoa, Mother Liza, I said I love you. Come on, baby.
Whoa. Leroy Smart with a song called Mother Liza. This is actually from a new CD that I just recently had sent to me called Keep the Pressure Down, and I think we'll be able to listen to a couple of more tracks from it before the end of today's program. You're listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. It's now time to bring you the final part of our four-part docudrama series, Tales of Dutch Formosa.
Tales of Dutch Formosa. Part 4, By This We Abide. In 1644, an invading Tartar army overran northern China, defeated the ruling Ming Emperor, and installed the first Qing Emperor on the imperial throne. Far to the south, however, beyond the immediate control of the victorious Tartars, the vital coastal provinces of Amoy and Fujian remained in the hands of a warlord who swore defiance to the new dynasty. This warlord was General Zheng Chenggong, known to the Dutch as Prince Koxinga. In 1657, Koxinga shut down the main trade routes out of Fujian, and the VOC governor in Formosa, Frederick Coyet, was obliged to negotiate a new trade treaty that allowed Koxinga to levy taxes. In return, Koxinga allowed the VOC to export 15 million pieces of prized Ming porcelain through Formosa over the next 3 years. Koxinga then fell sick from a mysterious illness, and as a special favor, he asked for Governor Coyet's personal surgeon, Dr. Christian Baer, to attend to him in Amoy. Now, some months later, Dr. Baer returns to Formosa. He is met in the council chamber of Castle Zelandia by Governor Coyet and Chief Merchant Thomas Iperin.
Christian, welcome home.
Thank you, Governor.
I don't think you've met our new Chief Merchant, Mr. Thomas Iperin.
How do you do, Chief Iperin?
Dr. Baer, congratulations on your safe return.
After 6 months at Koxinga's court in Amoy, it's good to be among friends again.
But Prince Koxinga is also our friend, Dr. Baer.
He may for the present be our ally, Chief Merchant, but I should not want to call a man like that my friend.
Indeed.
Were you not well treated, Christian?
I was treated well enough, Governor. But the Prince himself is one of the strangest devils I've ever met, and one of the cruelest as well. He thinks nothing of executing a concubine who displeases him. As a patient, he was impossible. He trusts no one. Not once did he let me properly examine him. And he made me prepare all my medicines in front of him, all the time watching me like a hawk.
Oh, you condemn the man for mere prudence, Doctor. Koxinga has many enemies.
No, Chief Merchant, I'm afraid you don't understand. This was the mistrustfulness of a madman.
Then madness? Is this your diagnosis, Christian?
Partly, Governor, yes. For his part, Koxinga insists that he suffers from what the Chinese call the cold winds, and nobody dares contradict him.
Not even you, Doctor?
Not while I was in his court, Chief Merchant, but I'll willingly contradict him now. In my opinion, this prince of the dynastic surname has an advanced case of syphilis. And I'm afraid that the dementia associated with this disease, not to mention the man's boundless vanity, has created in him a dangerous obsession with his own great destiny.
Christian, if he's as deranged as you say, would he be capable of mounting an attack against us here in Formosa?
I fear so, Governor, yes. For all his personal failings, the prince does have his public strengths. I confess I've rarely seen such a well-disciplined army, and his administration is a model of efficiency and ruthlessness. You know, he routinely extorts silver from the Chinese merchants.
I see.
I'm sorry to add to your troubles, Governor.
Governor, this is but one man's opinion.
An opinion I value highly, Thomas. In any case, my apprehension does not spring from Christian's words alone. Our spies tell us that the Chinese cabezas have long been encouraging Coxinger to attack.
You mean the Chinese headman? Ha! These are rumors, nothing more.
The siege ladders they were making lend a worrying substance to these rumors. The Chinese workers have been sending their possessions back to the mainland. No trading junks have arrived for months. Very well. So be it. It is folly to hope any longer. We must prepare for the worst.
So, against my advice, you'll send to Batavia for reinforcements?
I must, Thomas. If Coxinger invades, we'll need all the ships and men they can spare.
The Governor-General will not be pleased.
As peace continues to hold, the Governor-General in Batavia is reluctant to divert resources to Formosa. Eventually, however, he sends 700 men in 12 ships under the command of Captain John Vanderlaan. Vanderlaan has orders to attack Macau if he finds that these troops are not needed in Formosa. Since Vanderlaan is interested only in the riches of Macau, as soon as he reaches Zealandia, he concludes that Governor Coyette has too many men rather than too few. He asks the governor for additional troops to aid in the planned attack on Macau, but Governor Coyette and the council refuse his request. Vanderlaan is indignant. He invites Captain Padel, Sergeant Stockert, and several other officers from the castle to join him in the stateroom of the Dutch ship Vergos to further discuss the matter.
Well, gentlemen, you've all heard how the council voted against me today and refused my request for help in attacking Macau. Now, I know that none of you gentlemen was to blame, and I've asked you here tonight because I've a proposition for you. But first, another toast to Portuguese wine, women, and gold. Ah, especially the gold.
Especially the wine.
Especially the women.
Aye, that's the way. You're a gentleman after my own heart, I can tell.
Perhaps we are, John. But don't be too sure of us just yet. Let's hear your proposition.
Fairly said, Captain. So help yourself now to this good rum and listen close. You gentlemen know as well as me that there's plunder enough to be had from the Portuguese in Macau. I stopped there on my way here, pretended I need to take on more water. You can be sure I had a good look around, and what did I find? Why, that with a few more men, we could take the place easy. And with all that gold, we wouldn't have to wait until we're too old to enjoy our company pensions, eh?
Aye, what's the company ever done for us?
I'll hear no more of this. Captain Vanderlaan, you try to get us drunk and then propose that we desert our posts just when the colony is most threatened.
Oh, pish. Threatened by who, Lieutenant? By the great Coxinger, you mean? All this talk of Coxinger is nothing more than wind and smoke.
If Governor Coyette and the Council decide that we are needed here, then here, sir, must we stay.
Lieutenant, have you not heard that Coxinger lost 500 junks fighting the Tartars in Nanjing? With no fleet, how is he to bring his army here to Formosa on the backs of fishes?
To subvert the orders of the council is treason, sir. It is my duty to report this.
Treason? Nay, hold, Lieutenant, you mistake me. No one here speaks treason.
Then what were you proposing?
Nothing, blast you. Nothing but a request to be submitted to the Governor-General in Batavia. Your Governor Coyette acts against the interests of us all when he invents these dangers. Damn it, the Governor is a coward.
What's that?
Strange, the ship rolls as though in a gale, but there's no wind.
You hear that? It's a woman singing.
Sirens.
I'll get to the bottom of this. I'm going on deck.
On deck, the officers are shocked to see Taoyuan Bay transformed. black smoke, hissing steam, underwater eruptions, gouts of fire beneath the waves.
Behold the mouth of hell.
Oh, the beast of the deep awake.
Waves tremble.
Look there, it's a mermaid.
Waves tremble. Doom is sure. Doom is sure.
A mermaid, a creature of the devil. She sings us to our deaths.
Man the boats, get us ashore. Every man for himself.
Waves tremble.
Despite these terrifying omens and the eruptions and earthquakes that continue for 7 months, no real harm is done. Vanderlaan returns to Batavia, and for a while, peace holds. Then, at daybreak on April 30th, 1661, the lookouts on the ramparts of Castle Zealandia spy an enormous flotilla of junks just outside Taoyuan Bay.
Attack! It's Koxinga!
Give the signal! Call Governor Coyette!
There must be 1,000 junks. He's brought his whole army with him.
Steady, lad. Governor Coyette will know what to do.
The 5 Dutch ships in the harbor make sail and prepare to do battle against overwhelming odds. Koxinga sends some of his junks to attack the castle directly from the sea, and others to land thousands of men on the beaches of Baxenboy. The rest of his fleet he sends toward Lake Smuis Channel. Governor Coyette, Lieutenant Garrett, Captain Padel, and the lookouts watch from the castle walls.
Governor, the junks are maneuvering to blockade the deep waters of Lake Smuis Channel.
Koxinga evidently understands our position only too well. If he can control the channel, then the few ships we have will be trapped in the harbor.
Look, sir, Captain Hildord's ship, the Hector, has broken free. He's taking her out to the point towards the junks that are attacking the castle.
I trust the castle's seaward defenses are holding, Sergeant.
Aye, sir, no real danger there, but the men will be glad enough to have Captain Aildorp's assistance.
And there's the Graveland. She's blasted another junk. Looks like 100 Chinese in the water. Let's hope Koxinga is one of them.
Sir, look there, on the beach.
It's the Chinese settlers from Sakem. Hundreds of them crossing to Baxenboy to welcome the enemy troops ashore.
Governor Coyette.
Yes, Captain Petal.
Permission to take my men to Baxenboy to repel the invader, sir.
There are 150 junks heading to Baxenboy, Captain. You realize you'll be facing an enemy force of several thousand men.
Yes, sir, but they won't have tasted Dutch muskets before, and now it's time to attack. Sir, before they get properly dug in, a quick victory will send the whole pack of them running back to Amoy.
It's a risky maneuver, Governor. Padel's men will have to wade ashore from some distance out, and once they're on the beaches, it'll be hard to get them off again if anything goes wrong.
Oh, that doesn't frighten me, sir. Captain Vanderlaan always said that Chinese made worse soldiers than the natives.
Did he indeed? But I don't recall that Captain Vanderlaan ever had occasion to fight them.
But it stands to reason, sir. They don't even have muskets, just bows and arrows and swords.
Very well, Captain. Take 240 men and see what you can do. Our prayers go with you.
Thank you, sir.
Captain Padel's mission does not go well. After firing only 3 volleys, he finds himself outnumbered and outflanked by Koxinga's well-disciplined troops. In a panic, his men throw down their muskets. Captain Padel and half his men are killed, and the rest are taken prisoner. At sea, a fireboat sinks the Hector. The other Dutch vessels remain trapped in the harbor, all except the Maria, which slips past the blockade and, sailing against the southern monsoon, sets out on the long and perilous journey to Batavia. Meanwhile, on land, Koxinga's army easily captures the city of Provincia. After the battle, Koxinga retires to a blue silk tent, and the Mandarin Senge brings before him the highest-ranking Dutch prisoner, Deputy Governor Jacob Valentin.
Kneel down and knock your forehead on the earth, so that the Lord Koxinga can hear you.
How dare you? I am your prisoner, sir, but I will not be treated like a slave. Noble Prince, I am Deputy Governor Jacob Valentin of the Netherlands, and... Oh!
Red-haired dog. Show respect or your life is forfeit.
Tell me, Deputy Governor, are you fond of blue?
What? I don't understand.
Blue, the color. I always find blue so restful, so soothing. Wouldn't you agree?
Soothing? Yes, very.
I had this blue tent especially made. It's silk, of course, and on a bright day it becomes perhaps a little too pale. But at night, like this, lit only from within, it's quite perfect, don't you think?
Oh, yes, perfect.
You see, Sangay, I knew he'd agree. Deputy Governor Valentin is obviously a man of discernment and good taste. And I'm sure that, like me, he finds all this unpleasantness very disagreeable.
Indeed, Excellency, we all of us deplore it.
So many fine young men dying, one presumes, in agony on the field of battle. Of course, I leave all the details to my generals. My strengths and interests lie elsewhere.
And yet, of course, it still disturbs one. One cannot help but be upset by the proximity of such things.
There, Sangay, the Deputy Governor understands perfectly.
And so, of course, if there's anything I could do to alleviate the situation...
Sangay tells me there is. Isn't that right, Sangay?
Oh, yes, Excellency.
I expect he will have some questions for you later. First, though, I have composed several proclamations to be sent out to the villages. Come, you may help translate them for me.
Thanks to Valentin's treacherous complicity, Fort Provincia falls. Coxinga's troops occupy the city of Zeelandia, and the Dutch forces withdraw to Zeelandia Castle, their last stronghold in Formosa. Hoping that the besieged Dutch will surrender the castle intact, Coxinga sends Reverend Anthony Hambrook as his envoy to Governor Coyette and Chief Merchant Iperen.
Anthony, I thank God you're still alive, but for you to come to us like this, as Coxinga's messenger...
There are worse fates, Governor.
How did you fall into his hands?
When Coxinga attacked, we were at the new seminary in Sulong. At first, we continued our usual routine of prayers and instruction, but then we received a letter from Deputy Governor Valentin telling us to surrender to the nearest Chinese mandarin. Word spread among the villagers that the Dutch had been defeated. So, thinking to please their new masters, many of the natives turned against us. When they incited the scholars to destroy their books and quills, it was too much for Daniel Hendricks. He tried to stop them, but...
Did he not succeed? The scholars at the seminary were the best and most loyal of all our students. Surely there must have been some among them who helped us.
They surrounded him, Governor, and cut him to pieces.
Good God.
After that, it was impossible to stay. We set out for Zeelandia, the safest place. And with my daughter Susanna already working here in the hospital, we thought to have our family together again. But at Provincia, we were arrested. And now Coxinga holds the lives of my wife and children hostage against my return.
Father! Father!
Susanna! I thought I might never see you again.
But where is Mother? Where's Martin and the little ones?
Hush, hush. They're safe, alive and well.
And Franz?
Franz is with them. Your fiancé is a fine young man, Susanna, a great comfort to us all. He sends his respects. Do you have any word for him in return?
You mean you're going back? Father, no, you can't.
Susanna, I must. Your mother is waiting for me.
Then I shall come with you.
No, child, no, it is impossible. Your duty is here.
Your father is right, Susanna. It serves no purpose for you to give yourself to Coxinga when we need you here to help Dr. Bayer in the hospital.
Indeed. And perhaps you should return to the hospital now, for we have company business to discuss.
You may keep me in the castle, but while my father is here, I shall not leave his side.
Could she not stay, Chief Merchant? I don't know when we'll see each other again.
It would be most irregular.
These are irregular times, Chief Merchant.
Susanna, you may stay.
Thank you, sir.
Very well. But let us proceed to business. First, Reverend Hambrook, since you were in Sockham at the time, do you know why the fort surrendered so easily without even putting up a fight? The fort guarded the land bridge to Zealandia, and now it's in Koxinga's hands. He can attack us by land as well as by sea.
They had no food, Chief Merchant, and no water.
What nonsense! They had food for 6 months, and their well gave enough water to supply the whole settlement.
The well was blocked, and the food supplies disappeared.
Disappeared? Through treachery, you mean? It's those Chinese cabezas. Traitorous rogues to a man. We should have never have allowed them in the fort.
But how could we as Christians deny them shelter if they ask it?
Foolish girl. Did you not hear your father say how the Chinese have turned on us? Governor, they should all be removed from the castle forthwith.
It's true that, like the natives, some of the Chinese have proved unreliable, Chief Merchant. But as for what happened in Provincia, you might ask Deputy Governor Valentin.
Valentin? You accuse Valentin?
I say only what I know. Valentin's family is well treated. Koxinga himself summons the Deputy Governor frequently and instructs him to write many letters. He wrote the letter I have brought to you today.
Read it for us, Thomas.
If you surrender the castle before I fire my cannon on the walls, then I will spare you. If all your soldiers leave so that my soldiers may enter, then neither you nor your possessions nor even the smallest blade of grass will be harmed. 38 years ago, my star rose in the sky. This island is under the sign of my birth. Therefore, take warning, for wherever I go, I, Lord Koxinga, am destined to win.
Heaven protect us. So this is the kind of man we have to deal with.
Governor, these two flags are signals. If you agree to leave, fly this one from the castle ramparts. But if you intend to resist, then unfurl this blood-red banner.
Susanna, take quill and ink and write what I say. Your father will carry back my reply.
Hambrook returns to Provincia with Coyette's letter. Senge delivers it to Koxinga.
Excellency, the Dutch governor sends this in answer.
It's written in the language of the barbarian. Fetch Valentin.
Noble lord,
Get up! Read this!
We have duly received your letter, delivered to us by Reverend Hambrook. We have perfectly well understood its contents, but can give you but one answer, namely that, by the honour of our omnipotent and true God, our country and the directors of the Dutch East India Company, we are sworn to defend the castle even to the peril of our own lives. The soldiers you send against us will tell you with what resolution we make this answer, and by this we abide. Frederick Coyett, Governor.
What banner flies above the castle ramparts?
A blood red flag, my lord.
General Bepantuk will be pleased. Tomorrow he may try his cannon against the castle walls.
The next morning, from the ramparts of Castle Zealandia, Coyette, Captain Aildorp, and Lieutenant Garrett watch Bepantuk's men deploy their cannons before the castle walls.
I count 28 cannons, but I don't understand. They're so close, almost within range of our muskets.
They don't bother to dig trenches, and their left flank is defenseless against crossfire from our guns in the redoubt.
Do they not know we have cannon of our own?
Is it a trick?
Are they trying to frighten us or confuse us?
Perhaps it is simply that they have never fought against cannons before.
Should we fire upon them, Governor?
No, not yet. But load all our cannons with iron nails and musket balls. Quickly, Lieutenant, pass the word, and tell the gunners to wait for my signal.
Coyette's orders are passed along. The Dutch artillerymen load their guns with shrapnel and wait. Bepantuk's guns fire first, hitting the castle walls with little effect. But the Chinese gunners celebrate their success with shouts and cheers. Some even leave their guns and come closer to inspect the damage.
It is as though they have won a great victory. Do we fight soldiers or fools? Enough. Captain, give the word.
Fire!
In a moment, the entire contingent of Chinese gunners lie dead or dying. But to the amazement of the Dutch, Bepontuck merely sends 150 more men to replace those that have fallen.
They're sending fresh gunners. But this is madness. Wait, Captain. One moment more. Very well.
Fire!
And again? Merciful heaven, what can we do but annihilate them? Pray God forgive us.
Amen, sir.
Give the order.
Fire!
General Bepontuck sends wave after wave of gunners against the Dutch until 1,000 of his men lie dead beneath the castle walls. He stops only when the smoke becomes so thick that nothing can be seen. Coyette then immediately sends out engineers to disable the Chinese cannon. Meanwhile, in the confusion, hundreds of civilians flee from Zeelandia City and take refuge in the castle. Koxinga accepts these reversals with unexpected complacency. Leaving Bepontuck to continue the siege, he tours the country with gifts of tobacco, silk gowns, caps, and Chinese boots for the village chiefs. Wherever he goes, he orders all evidence of the Dutch language to be eradicated. People and places with Dutch names are given Chinese names instead. He also finds time to organize the Chinese farmers, confiscate native lands, collect taxes, and establish a civil administration. Meanwhile, in Zeelandia, the siege drags on. One night in the hospital, near the end of another long day tending the sick and wounded, Susanna Hambroke talks with an exhausted Mrs. Hendricks.
Oh, Susanna, I don't know how you keep going.
What strength I have comes from the Lord, Mrs. Hendricks. Pray to him, and he will give you succor.
Yes, I know. That's what my poor dear Daniel would have said. But, oh, I'm so tired. And there's so much suffering, such horrible diseases, such dreadful wounds.
There, there, come. It's time you went to bed. I'll finish our work here.
Oh, thank you, child, thank you. I'll pray for you.
Pray for us all. Good night, Mrs. Hendricks.
Mrs. Hendricks leaves, and after a few moments, Sergeant Stockard enters.
Miss Susanna?
Oh, you startled me.
Sorry, miss, but I hear tell, miss, that you'd like to visit your family.
It's my dearest wish, Sergeant. But it's foolish, of course. I know it's impossible.
Maybe not, miss. I know Kishinga's camp like the back of my hand, where the prisoners are held, everything. And tonight I'm leading another raiding party.
Oh, Sergeant, could you take a message to my father?
Better than that. I could take you yourself.
You mean you could smuggle me out of the castle and back in again?
It'd be dangerous, of course, but why, bless you, we could have you back in the castle again before dawn. One thing, though, miss. Do you have much silver coin?
Silver? Yes, but why?
For bribes and so on. In case we run into any mischance. Silver comes in very handy with the Chinese.
I see. How much should I bring?
I'd bring it all, just to be on the safe side.
Whatever you think is best, Sergeant.
Then meet me by the castle gates in 2 hours, after the moon has set. Don't forget your silver now.
Later that night, Susanna and Stockard leave the castle together. But Stockert, a mercenary and a veteran of many campaigns, has decided that the Dutch cause is lost and intends to change sides. To make himself more acceptable to Koxinga, he betrays Susanna. After robbing her of silver reels, he ties her hand and foot and presents her to Koxinga as a gift for his harem. Stockert then uses his knowledge of the Dutch military tactics to help General Bepontuck capture the redoubt, and even saves Koxinga's life by alerting him to a fatal trap. But still, the Chinese fail to take the castle. Months pass, Koxinga's food supplies run low, morale falls, and all the time the Dutch endure as resolutely as ever. Then on November 6th, 1661, during a heavy monsoon rain, a joyful bell summons Governor Coyette to the castle ramparts.
Governor, look! 10 ships just entering the channel.
It's the relief fleet from Batavia. The Maria must have made it.
I don't envy them being at sea in this weather. Look at the size of those waves.
As they anxiously watch the relief ships maneuvering in the heavy seas, Dr. Bear comes running up.
Governor!
See, Christian, Batavia has not abandoned us after all. Now we are certain to prevail, and if the Tartars help us as they promised, then Coxinger will be finished once and for all.
Governor, I...
Why, Christian, what's the matter?
Lieutenant Garrett has just been questioning a Chinese defector. I just heard. I thought you should be told.
What, man? Spit it out.
There was a rebellion in the northern villages. The natives ambushed and killed over 2,000 of Coxinger's men.
But this is splendid news.
Yes, but Coxinger said the uprising was incited by the Dutch, especially the teachers. In retaliation, he's executed every one of the male Dutch prisoners. And for the teachers, like Anthony Hambrook, there was a special punishment.
Yes?
Crucifixion.
In the village of Sinkan, Anthony Hambrook and Susanna's fiancé, Franz van der Voorn, still hang on the crosses where they died. And Dieding, a native soldier in Chinese uniform, still guards them. Susanna and her mother, Mrs. Hambrook, come to ask for the bodies, but native Enid priestesses interfere.
The redhead ones approach! Stop them!
Hold! No closer!
I pray you let us pass.
Be gone!
For pity's sake, this man was my husband.
And my father, and this the man I was to marry.
Their spirits have departed. Be gone!
You have no business here. Do as the priestess bids you and leave this place.
Their bodies will feed the crows.
But we bring...
I see! They carry magic bundles.
No, we bring winding clothes and oil for their wounds.
Stop them. It is their teachers say. They would resurrect the dead.
Coxinger does not permit these things. We no longer follow the Dutch god. He's weak.
You risk your soul if you deny us.
Be gone.
I cannot help you.
We shall pray for you.
Be gone. Food for the crows.
Food for the crows.
Over the next few months, the Dutch launch several valiant counterattacks against the enemy. But these brave and desperate sorties cost many lives and accomplish little. The ships from Batavia also bring scant relief. Continued bad weather hampers operations, and after one ship is lost, the rest of the fleet sails away again, with many of the reinforcements still aboard. In the absence of any further help from Batavia, Governor Coyette has no choice but to surrender. Even so, he manages to conclude a treaty on terms which, under the circumstances, are very favorable to the Dutch. After 5 days of negotiations, he presents the 18th and final article of the treaty for ratification by his officers and the 29 surviving counselors.
Following the release of every servant of the company now imprisoned by the Chinese in Formosa, the Dutch soldiers may come forth from the castle with flying banners, loaded rifles, and beating drums, marching thus for embarkation on the company's ships under command of the governor. Is this the will of you all?
Aye.
Against? Very well, gentlemen. Our work here is done. I will send word to Coxinger.
On February 9th, 1662, 400 men, women, and children leave the castle and go aboard the Graveland. But even after the ships are ready to sail, Governor Coyette orders them to remain at anchor. As the sun sets over Taoyuan Bay, Dr. Bear joins the governor on deck.
It's been 10 days, Governor. We cannot stay here forever.
100 souls, Christian. Some staying by choice, hoping that their loved ones will return. Others lost, left behind, sent to the mainland as slaves. How can we not wait for them?
But we have waited, Governor. And the captain says we should sail with this tide. When we reach Batavia, you can ask the company to send another ship back for them.
If 1,000 men were of no consequence to the company, Christian, what will they care for 100 stragglers? But you're right. We've waited long enough. Captain, give the order to set sail.
Aye, sir.
Make sail there. Weigh anchor. Look lively now.
So this is the end, Christian. And after all, I wonder what we achieved here. Did we ever really touch the heart of this place? Or have we just been plowing the sea?
Who can say, Governor? The human heart is fickle.
Listen.
It's the women at Provincia, the ones who stayed behind.
They hold the fortress for us. Perhaps by this we will abide.
Let goods and kindred go. This mortal life also. The body they may kill. God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever.
When the Graveland arrived in Batavia, Frederick Coyette was immediately arrested and tried. For all his leadership and steadfastness, the VOC saw only his failure, and he was sentenced to exile for life on the island of Pulau I in Indonesia. It took 9 years of appeals by his family and friends to secure his release. Just 4 months after he succeeded in expelling the Dutch from Formosa, Koxinga, lord of the dynastic surname, died from an unknown sickness. At the age of 38.
Thank you for joining us for By This We Abide, part 4 in the series Tales of Dutch Formosa. The part of Governor Frederick Coyette was played by Morris Harrington. Dr. Christian Baer was Paul Jackson. Chief Merchant Thomas Ipperen was Don Gilliland. Captain Vanderland was Norman Szabo. Sergeant Radis Stockert was Liam Thompson. Captain Thomas Padel was Mark Baker. Lieutenant Garrett was Seamus Thompson. The Mermaid was Rosie Highland. The Lookout was Norman Szabo. The Corporal was Paul Jackson. Senge was Wesley Coe. Deputy Governor Jacob Valentin was Edmund Ryden. Coxinga was Ken Lee. Anthony Hombrook was Ron Tranquilla. Susanna Hombrook was Katie Hausen. The Chinese Soldier was Liam Thompson. Captain Aildorp was Paul Jackson. Mrs. Hendricks was Lori Solbakken. The Enid Priestesses were Al Payne, Susan Dawson, and Ray Meyer. Deeding was Wesley Coe. Mrs. Hombrook was Sarah Andres. The Sea Captain was Norman Szabo. The women prisoners were Jen Vandebogart, Evelyn Chen, and Rosie Highland. The diary voice was read by Andrew Ryan, the conclusion by Lynn Scott. By This We Abide was written by Lynn Scott and Norman Szabo, directed by Lynn Scott, and produced and engineered by Andrew Ryan. The series' music consultant was Alan Wu.
The final program in our series, our docudrama, Tales of Dutch Formosa. And actually, I didn't realize how long part four was, so we actually are running out of time, so I'm going to bid you farewell. We're going to end with The Best Big Youth. That's the name of the band. The song is called Big Youth. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell wishing you all, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Oh, now this is a cellar. Popular musicalist called Black Cinderella. Musicalist produced on the way by the man called El Rodway. Musicalist is sing along the way that you don't say. Don't make a chill, don't make you feel a Cinderella. You know. Don't make a kind of in a till I got a feel a Cinderella. Musicalist don't make a sing along the way, don't make a sing like a sinner before. You know. Musicalist to make a feel so fine. Come and sing along. Don't make a feel about a singer, that a singer song I do could never be too wrong. The Middle-East that will make you feel so sure. Middle-East that will take the gang, you know. Cause living in this land, there is a whole lot of tribulation. But man, when you do wrong, then you have to be upon conception. You know, you should never do things so. Cause when you say so,
I'm gonna get that one before you need it once more. Make it.